Guys, we are fired up to be at the 13th Annual Pacific Coast Sport Fishing Festival happening on March 2nd to the 5th at the OC Fair and Event Center in Costa Mesa. Tackle, fishing reports, fishing boats, amazing seminars, everything's going to be at this show. Make sure not to miss this one. Plus, we're going to have a booth for the Doc Talk podcast, recording live podcasts throughout the day, so make sure you stop by. Not to mention, we are giving away a show package at CCA. $60 gets you entry to the show, a tote bag, 1-year membership to CCA, and loaded whip with goodies from our sponsors. Be sure to check us out. Check out that show package at ccacalifornia.org. Register today for it or stop by the CCA booth outside the show whenever you go to the show and take advantage. We'll see you guys there. Welcome back to the CCA California podcast. My name is Chris, alongside my good friend, Mr. Darren Kreil. Darren, what's going on, dude? How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Great to be here.
Yes, I've been looking forward to this episode for like months. It's been crazy. It's going to be super, super awesome. Before we get started, make sure to go follow us on Instagram at CCA California and go visit our website at ccacalifornia.org for all the latest news and all the good stuff. And without further ado, we've got my good friend, Mr. Rory Taylor from Traeger.
How's it going?
Rory, how's it going?
Doing awesome. Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for coming down, man. I know you're not in California anymore. You're in Utah, but glad to have you.
Yeah, super stoked to be here.
Awesome,
We've gotten a lot of snow, so walking around in shorts and a t-shirt feels great.
How much you got on the ground up there right now?
I read a report that Alta Ski Area has over 6 feet.
Man,
yeah. 6 feet.
And we live kind of down in the valley, and I've shoveled more snow this season than I've had in the last two winters combined. So
no kidding.
We need it. We need it, you know. Got to keep those dead bodies and meat hidden. So hopefully we get a good winter.
Oh, man. Well, before we get started here, when was the last time you went fishing down here in Southern California?
Man, earlier this year.
Yeah,
this year was a little bit hectic. You know, obviously the world was crazy, so I didn't get down as much as I'd like to. But yeah, I think it was early summer. I think we snuck out and got a couple days in, but nothing too crazy.
Bluefin fishing or something?
No, mostly just inshore local stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, nothing too crazy.
Do you prefer that, the inshore stuff, or as opposed to the bluefin?
What's attracted me to fishing was not really what we're fishing for, but who I'm fishing with. That's always been really cool. Like, that's what I think is the best part about
fishing. That's what it's all about, right?
100%. So, really, it's just, if I get an invite or I get an opportunity to fish with somebody, like, I mean, I don't care what they want to fish for. Like, you know, I'm just looking forward to hanging out with those people and hanging out with friends and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit ADD, so I don't mind standing in the stern and casting for 10 hours straight. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not picky. Like, if it's time on the water, I don't care what I'm fishing for.
Nice, nice. And in Utah, you're huge into trout fishing right now.
I just got into fly fishing.
How's that been?
It's been wild. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd be getting so, like, obsessed with trout fishing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of hard to explain because, you know, growing up in Southern California, like, all my buddies that fish, they're pretty aggro. Like, mm-hmm. It is balls to the walls, like, running and gunning, like, it's, you know, it's aggressive, right?
Yeah.
So you look at all these Instagram accounts and you look at all this information about fly fishing and they look so dainty and it looks so finessey and they're wearing these matching outfits, you know, and I just, it just never really jumped out at me. Mm. And we were up, we had some customers come into town, so we took them fishing and we were fishing on the Provo River, which I didn't know this at the time, but apparently it's a, one of the like most sought after world-class trout fisheries in the world.
Right in your backyard.
Literally 20 minutes from my doorstep. And we were just fishing small little dry flies and catching a couple. I was having a good time. And then all of a sudden I hooked a small fish, probably 7-8 inches, nothing big. And I, you know, I'm pretty accustomed to, you know, when you're fishing bass and stuff, they'll jet in a hole or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden the thing just stopped. And I thought maybe it was hung up on something. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it started running upstream. And I like looked through my glasses and I was like, oh my gosh, there was like a 27-inch trout that had bitten the fish I was hooked on.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa. I was like, okay, this is cool. Like, I'm really feeling this. It's very visual, you know, the dry fly thing. Went back a couple days later on my own and caught a couple fish. And then, and then went up and we have a lot of reservoirs. So we have a lot of cutthroat. Mm-hmm. And those things on streamers and those things on top water is unfreaking believable. No, I mean, it is some of the most visual fishing you're gonna experience. And then, it was game on. You know, I was waking up at 3 a.m, driving all, you know, 2 hours, different reservoirs, looking for different, you know, cutthroats and areas and stuff. And mm-hmm. It was all new, learning it. You know, I have Navionics from, you know, living down here. So a lot of those reservoirs were on there. So I was able to find structure and depth and drop offs and just, yeah. So it was all new to me. And then rivers don't freeze. And I haven't gotten into ice fishing yet. Everyone talks about how great that is, but wow. I'm not there yet. But yeah, and then I just fished all winter long in the snow.
There's something about being on the ice fish. I mean, I don't know if I could do it. You know, that always in the back of your head, the ice is going to break.
I've done it once.
Right.
And that crackling, like apparently you want to hear the crackling. That's a good sign.
Really?
Yeah, because it's adjusting, it's freezing. Like it makes those sounds when it's actually getting thicker. But
good to know.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Yeah, like I said, I don't know if I trust them. I'm a big dude. Like, and you see guys out there on like, what do you call it? Like snowmobiles and like side by sides on the ice, just like trying around. And they
tow these sheds out there.
Yep.
I didn't realize there was ice fishing in Utah.
Big, yeah.
Really?
I think it's a lot of, it's very social too. Like people will drag TVs out there and then they'll just like put their, you know, their big tent shed thing up. And then it's just, they'll just like, they'll be barbecuing, watching football.
No
and
kidding.
Then just like with, you know, 12-inch hole in the, and if the, so again, it's like, I think there's a handful of guys that are super avid from what I've gathered, but I think it's pretty social, you know?
Wow. So you've been out in Utah for a couple of years now. So you're pretty much dialed in into trout fishing right now.
I wouldn't say I'm dialed in, but I'm definitely obsessed.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, there's a lot of similarities between other types of fishing. I mean, understanding conditions, looking for the right waters, all that type of stuff, but that's so different. I mean, you know, you look at these flies and we're talking like 24 and 22 size hooks that I'm like, I'm kind of getting to the age where I'm like, am I going to have to get readers? Like this is
it's a small, you know, hook.
Plus it's like 20 degrees. So your hands are numb and you're trying to tie with 3 pound test. So again, it's just this whole new, like, you know, going from mostly fishing, tying knots with 20 mm-hmm. plus pound fluorocarbon,
yeah.
and, you know, mono to 3 pound fluoro is, yeah. So, and then I'm like, I'm looking at these things and I can't tell the difference, but apparently the fish can. It's just, it's a trip to think that you're in this river or this thing's coming flying down essentially the, you know, this runway or this freeway. And then all of a sudden the fish can see this tiny little hook with whatever thread on it and they bite it, you know? And then it's like, they not only are you fighting the fish, but then you're also fighting the current. So you're fighting, you know, if you get lucky, a 20-inch fish, and there's rocks, and there's it's just, so again, it's just this whole thing. And then on top of that, you're walking around, and it's slippery. You're falling in. I'm falling all the time. Like, you know, so it's just this whole new experience. So it's been a lot of fun.
So as born and raised in Southern California, you're adapting well to the life in Utah.
Yeah, I really am.
So, nice.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Cool, man. So basically, you're kind of like waiting in the rivers.
Yeah, all waiting, and then there's a lot of rivers you can float, mm-hmm. which is a whole nother trip. Cause again, you know, my boss, he has a float boat. If you've seen it on my Instagram, and he has a Traeger attached to the back of it. So that's a whole new experience. Cause you put it at the top of the river and you float for sometimes 2 days, 3 days, truck's waiting for you at the bottom and you're just camping out. We'll sleep out. You're just fishing all day long, eating good food, hanging out. And it's just really, it's beautiful. And mm-hmm. again, it's such a different, from an aesthetic standpoint, it's so different than anything we're used to in Southern California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So it's been a lot of fun to explore it and learn all this new stuff. And yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's like, I feel like I'm 14 again, trying to learn how to fish, you know?
That's so awesome.
Fun.
That's cool, man. Well, before we get too much further along, you're at Traeger now. Tell us a little bit about the gig there and what were you doing before Traeger?
Yeah, it's a funny story actually. So, it's actually been 8 years of this month, so I've been there for a long time. And prior to Traeger, I worked for a medical device company doing product management, and I've had numerous sales roles and things like that. And a good buddy of mine, he actually got a job at Traeger about 9 years ago, and he hit me up, said, hey, you know, they got a new owner that's come in. They're kind of trying to relaunch this thing. They're looking for some direct sales rep. You should throw your name in the hat. And I did. And here I am 8 years later. So I've been doing sales for Traeger this whole time. So working with all the retailers in the Western United States.
So where's your territory at?
When I first started, it was California, Arizona, and Nevada. Those were kind of the three states. And then there was a couple of us that kind of serviced the retailers in that area. And then now I work with the sales teams across pretty much the whole Western United States. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So pretty much from New Mexico into Colorado, up into Wyoming, up into Montana, and everything west of that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. So overall, in general, Traeger's going pretty well. I mean, I know it's exploded in just popularity ever since, I mean, before COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, what's crazy, people don't realize this, Traeger's been around since the late 80s. And so, again, we invented the wood pellet grill, so, you know, but it was pretty underground, like,
yeah,
there wasn't a lot of push behind it, additionally from a marketing standpoint. So even when I started, it was all really word of mouth, not a ton of retailers. And then as people started to kind of learn about it and understand how easy it is, the versatility, how it fits into people's lifestyles. Seriously. Especially, I mean, it's like I got three kids. So outside of trying to fish and have hobbies, like we're busy.
I put a TV in the backyard. I set mine on I got to watch the barbecue, sit out there drinking beers, watch TV. Now I got to stand by it.
Yeah. That lasted about a year until my wife figured out that I don't have to stand by it.
Yeah.
And then I'll never forget, we, you know, we used to go to church, and then I'd be like, I got to go home and check on the barbecue. So I like bail and leave church, you know? And then we came out with the one that had the Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd be like, wake up Sunday morning, and she's like, make sure you use the Wi-Fi one so you don't have to leave church. So she figured it out real quick.
How nice of her to remind you.
Oh, yeah, bless her heart. She puts up with a lot, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, like I said, I mean, from a versatility standpoint and just like a sustainability standpoint with how much fish people are catching these days, like, it's a huge tool.
When it comes to the pellet grills, Traeger's especially, I mean, it's with the popularity and with the explosion of just pellet grills in general and all that, it's transformed. I bet you've probably seen guys or gals, for that matter, basically who either hardly cook or have never cooked before, and that's pretty much either given them confidence to cook or just transformed everything in the kitchen.
It's made everybody a Michelin chef.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
And like, it's super easy to do.
It really is. And you learn, you know, like, for example, like, I teach a couple classes, barbecue classes up at the college up by my house. And
we're going to talk about that later. Yeah. But what's Professor Rory. Yeah.
But what's interesting is it's like really like, okay, so I, you know, pulled pork. Mm-hmm. It's super easy. You can't mess it up. It's a very forgiving meat. But I'll just change the seasonings based on how I want to serve it. So if I want to do a traditional pulled pork barbecue sandwich, my kids like sweet stuff, so I'm going to go more sweet. But if we're going to do tacos and I want to turn that into like carnitas or I want to use it for enchiladas, I'm going to make it more savory. So I'm going to change that up, the rub. So I'm not changing the cooking method, but rather than using a sweet rub and then basting it with, you know, butter, brown sugar, and honey, or excuse me, apple juice, I'll use more savory rub and then I'll baste it with like a michelada and, you know, a little bit of Coke and a butter. Because then again, you get a totally different flavor profile. But the cooking method is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! This was a bad idea going into this podcast hungry.
One of my favorite things to put in those pellet grills is tuna bellies.
Big time!
Oh my god, best thing ever.
Okay, so before Traeger, you were in medical devices and all that. Yep. And overall, how long have you been at Traeger now?
8 years.
8 years. Yeah. Overall, liking it. I mean, it's a killer job.
I'd
love to have it.
No, it's been it's been a huge blessing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've made some of my best friends, you know, because of that barbecue. And that's really what, you know, kind of our goal with this whole thing is, you know, our mission statement's bringing people together to create a more flavorful world. And it's pretty rad to like, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas are my favorite because first of all, I love prime rib. That is my favorite thing to cook. But getting all these like updates of guys cooking their first turkey for their family or cooking the prime rib and they're sending pictures and like,
I know I've sent you a couple.
It's pretty rad. Like, I love it. You know, people are like, I'm sorry, I know you get these all the time. I'm like, no, honestly, like, this is rad. Like,
yeah.
You know, this is cool. So it is. It's pretty neat to see how people get so excited. And like, I mean, yeah, like I always tell people when I go fish with them, it's like I'm bringing three things. I'm going to bring beverages, gas money and barbecue, you know? And I remember one time we were fishing with Gary Reyes and a couple guys, and we were fishing out at St. Clemente Island, fishing bass all morning. And then we got our buddies together. We linked up with another boat, Jay Jones and those guys. And we tied the boats off and we had tri-tip sandwiches. We had smoked tuna belly appetizers. And we're just sitting there and just eating, talking about the morning and what was working. And then, yeah, everyone's super full. And then boom, break up, start exploring opposite end of the island. And it, again, so it just makes a really fun day out of it. And that food's a huge component of it.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So out of all the different, I'll call them sectors of industries and all that stuff, you have the fishermen, you have the hunting sector and all that stuff. Have you seen like an explosion in one versus the other, or is it just everything or everyone?
That's a good question. We've seen different explosions at different times. Obviously, you know, we've definitely seen a good explosion from the outdoorsmen in Southern California. Surfers out of the gate took hold of it really well. We've seen women really take hold of it. I mean,
really?
My wife sells tons of Traegers every time she posts something. She uses it all the time too. So we've seen these different levels of explosions at different times, you know. And again, you have these guys that are super into sports and watching sports, and that's become a huge part of their repertoire and their weekends. The coolest thing I think I've kind of seen transition. So one of the coolest stories I think was, I remember I had been 2 or 3 years into it. CJ Hobgood, a lot of these pro surfers were starting to get into it, cooking all the time. And so it was interesting. This guy came up to me at an event. We're cooking in front of an Ace Hardware or whatever it was. And he's like, yeah, I've had a Traeger for a while. He goes, this Traeger's made me cool. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, my kids think I'm cool. He's like, my kids are really into surfing. I don't surf. We've never really had anything in common. And all of a sudden, my high school kids come home and they're like, Dad, can we cook on the Traeger this weekend? And they are like bragging to their friends that their dad had a Traeger. And he's like, yeah, like I have this, the barbecue, which I never thought in a million years would be this thing that helps me and my 16-year-old son connect. And it's just, it's pretty unique because, again, you know, my son's 11. And I've been fortunate enough that so far he's into things that I like, you know. I want to go fish. He likes to play football. Like, but it's like, man, if I didn't have those things, like, it'd be hard. It'd be really hard on a relationship and a strain. So to hear people talk about how, like, yeah, this has bettered my life is pretty rad. It's pretty special.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Changing the world one Traeger at a time.
Yeah. Never in a million years did I ever think I'd be selling barbecues. And here we are.
Yeah. I mean, Traeger as a company and all that, I know I've spent, you know, some phone calls and that, and service and everything. Everything's just top notch and all that. Really good quality. I just built, we were saying this before we kicked it on here. I got married about 2 months ago, and my wife got me an Ironwood 885 for my wedding gift. Thank you, baby.
Congratulations.
And thank you. She's a good one.
On the grill, not the marriage.
Yeah. Just kidding. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I just built that same one just a week ago, and it's all solid.
Yeah.
It's all solid and comes pretty much almost turnkey.
Yep.
Put on some legs and you're good.
I don't know if you noticed it, but one of the first instructions in that assembly guide is
grab a beer or grab a six pack of beer.
And then each step tells you, like, the, you know, step four, take a drink of beer.
Yep.
And then, you know, and then the box, the inside of the box,
right.
You turn it right side out or inside out, one of it always ways, and it turns into a Traeger clubhouse for the kids. And we actually got a Christmas card from a third grade class in Canada, and it was signed by all the kids, and they said, thank you so much for the teacher bought a Traeger and then took it into the class, and it's become like one of the most fun playthings in the class is that box.
Interesting.
That's fun.
Yeah. And so it is Traegers. Again, it's about the experience. I mean, it's not about just cooking good food. It's the prep. It's, you know, it's cooking it, it's serving it, it's putting the grill together. Like, we want every step of the process to be fun and enjoyable, you know? And again, sometimes things break. I mean, it's, you know, everything does.
Name of the game.
So again, yeah, we want to try to make that experience as well as enjoyable as possible too.
Okay. So I have a question that I've been begging or dying to ask you. So when it comes to, say beginner level, medium, and then say like the expert and all that stuff, what are three different things that one could actually cook at each different level?
Oh, yeah. So we, if you haven't cooked bacon on a Traeger, it's insane.
Oh, my gosh.
Just put it like 15, 20 minutes to like 375. And then you kind of, we joke, you go through the bacon wrap stage where you start wrapping everything in bacon.
Yep.
But I would say probably like for your first big meat where you're like, I'm putting in time, pulled pork is probably the most versatile and most forgiving. Mm-hmm. Plus it makes great leftovers. It's pretty cost effective compared to a lot of the other meats, proteins. Mm-hmm. So I'd recommend like for people's first one to do those or ribs.
Mm-hmm.
The 3-2-1 recipe is not my favorite recipe, but it is the most downloaded recipe on the Traeger app.
Interesting.
People love that recipe. And then people get really stressed out about brisket. It's not, they overthink it. It's really, you just need time.
See, that's what I want to kind of christen this new Traeger with, is brisket, because I've never tried it before.
Do it.
Yeah. I just need the time.
Best thing ever.
Give yourself 18 hours.
I was going to say, so what goes into your brisket, Rory?
So you give yourself plenty of time.
Yeah.
Everyone who says they struggle with brisket or even any big protein, that's usually the issue. They don't give themselves enough time. They'll give themselves 10 hours or 12 hours. So I always tell people, like, you can't speed a cook up, especially with a brisket cook. So if it hits a stall, you can't push through that stall, which means it gets to like 180, 190, and then it just stays there for hours. But
what causes a stall?
I don't know. Not everyone, not every brisket does it. They do it for different amounts of time. I don't know if, I personally don't know if it's a fat content thing. I don't know if it has to do with, I don't know. I don't know if it's more lean meats. I haven't seen any correlation personally.
So if it stalls, it's no big deal. You just gotta push through.
And then you can keep meat warm for like 5-7 hours with a good cooler. Just leave it in tinfoil or the butcher paper, wrap it up in a couple beach towels, put in a cooler. It'll stay hot for 5 hours. So even if it finishes way before you want to serve it, you want to let it rest for at least an hour.
Right.
So I always give myself in about an 18-hour window from when I put it on to when I want to slice it and serve it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually, brisket's interesting too. It's a lot of meat. It's expensive. My family prefers beef ribs, the short ribs, the full stacks. They usually come in like 4 bones.
Yeah.
They're square, usually a few inches thick. You cook it just like a brisket. It's about a third of the time to a half of the time. And it's just like a brisket lollipop. It's like brisket on a bone.
Oh my God.
And so it's good. You can cut them up, you know, and they're really rich too.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, it's like 2 or 3 big bites or I'm good usually. So yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
Doing a tri-tip this weekend for mine.
Oh my gosh. This is my new favorite phrase, brisket lollipop. I never heard that before. That's cool, man. So when it comes to we'll get into all the different combos and all that stuff, but as a go-to, do you get the question often where it's like, I use apple pellets versus signature pellets or whatever, and I can't really tell the difference or whatnot? Does that take time at all?
It depends on the profile. So I usually tell the difference between like a robust wood, like a hickory and a mesquite.
Okay.
Cherry's my go-to.
Yeah.
I use cherry for 99% of my cooks.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty versatile. It's still really good on beef. Still has enough subtleness for pork and chicken and stuff like that. So it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing, for example, a prime rib this weekend. So I'm either going to use our bold blend, which has a little bit of rosemary in it, or I'm going to use our brisket blend, which has some cracked pepper actually mixed into the pellet.
There was like a holiday blend too, right? That came out?
Yeah, we do a turkey blend every year
that comes
with the brine kit and stuff. And actually that brine kit is really good for pork.
Really?
Yeah. So right now is my favorite time of the year to buy a rack of pork. So essentially a pork prime rib. And then I'll brine it for 18 hours using that turkey brine kit. And it turns out insane.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I like applewood.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Applewood.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When, with the different pellets and all that stuff, is there any, I guess it would probably depend on your climate, if you buy them for the whole year and just let them kind of sit and all that, versus is it better just to go get them fresh whenever you need it? Or
I usually keep 4 or 5 bags on hand. I also cook a lot more than the average person, but yeah, I keep 4 or 5 bags on hand and just keep them in the garage. We make some stay dry pellet bends, which work really well. They have kind of a little rubber seal around them and then they fit under the grill. So you can switch your pellets out pretty easily. But yeah, I mean, if you live, I got friends that have grills in Hawaii and they've had them for 6-7 years and they're still ticking. So yeah, I would say definitely keep it covered. I don't cover my grill because I try to beat the heck out of it. So I've had a grill now in my backyard in Utah for 3 years without a cover.
Didn't you post something where it was like under a freaking foot of snow?
It was last weekend. It was under, we had like a foot of snow and it, fired that thing right up and melted the snow right off of it and things were ticking. So, yeah.
Oh my goodness. On that note, what's the best thing someone could do as far as preventative maintenance and all that stuff? Is it really just following the directions?
That's a good question. The biggest thing is just probably keeping the, keeping it clean from grease.
Interesting.
Yeah. Pork butts, brisket, all that stuff produces a lot of grease, especially when you're cooking low and slow, you're rendering that fat. So that fat's coming out. So keeping it that either tinfoil or using those drip tray liners and keeping it clean. Every 6 months too, I also do where I actually will flush out the auger. Because again, we don't use any sort of binders or anything. So you do get some sawdust that builds up. And so what I'll do is I'll clean that hopper out and vacuum it really good. Turn the auger on just to push all that out. Or if I see a lot of it, I'll actually take it out maybe once a year, deep clean. And then, we have a degreaser that's all natural. I mean, you can even drink the stuff, but it works insane. It's all citrus based and I just spray that thing down, let it kind of soak in, and then I'll just give it a scrub. And but other than that, just keeping the grease out of it. That seems to be like all these pictures you see on Instagram and stuff. And again, it's every wood pellet grill has that same issue. It's not a Traeger thing. Any wood pellet grill that's catching grease and holding grease is going to have that issue. So just keeping it clean is definitely the most important thing.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I probably vacuum mine out. Anytime I change out the tinfoil or change out my drip tray liner,
right?
I have this little tiny mini $30 shop vac I've had for 5 years, and I just zap it real quick and things are good to go.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of depends. It's almost like personal preference on how often you clean your grill. Because I know guys that clean it once every 6 months, but use it, probably once a week or so.
Yeah.
And then for me, I'm cleaning it almost religiously after every third cook or something.
Yeah. You'll stop doing that. It's just anything, right? You're excited. You want to take care of it. And then all of a sudden you're third and fourth night and you're I can go one more cook.
Exactly. Have you heard any of those horror stories where it's you've seen a picture, someone sends you a picture of this grill and it's whoa, holy crap.
So what's interesting is I usually get, people call and be like, hey, my grill's not working, it doesn't get up to temp, whatever it is. And I'll be like, oh, when's the last time you cleaned it? And then you'll see the three dots pop up. Then you see them disappear. And then you'll see it pop up and you see it disappear. And then they're like, what do you mean by clean it? Or they'll be like, never. I'm like, okay, let's start with that. And it seemed 9 times out of 10, a thorough cleaning usually fixes the issue.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. How important is it? Because, sometimes I'll skip this part and I know it's really bad, but how important is it to prime your grill before you cook?
You only have to do the initial priming once.
Really?
Yeah. You just, because again, once, what the priming is doing is it's essentially charging that auger. So just filling the auger with pellets. So once it's full, it's going to continue to stay full.
So I don't need to prime it every time.
No. So the only time I prime it when it's first out of the box, and then prime it once I do a deep cleaning and I push all it out. So there's nothing in there. Then I just prime it again.
Huh. Interesting. That's good to know. Yeah. I'm learning all kinds of good stuff, Darren.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. We got to get you a Traeger now.
Yes.
When it comes to the rubs and all that, because I know Traeger offers a whole ton of rubs and all that. Which one's your favorite?
Depends on what I'm cooking.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I want more of a traditional taste, with chicken or turkey, that fin and feather is super good. I also like using that on yellowtail stuff. If I want more traditional, I'm going to roast some fish or whatever. Beef wise, I really like our Black and Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. Become one of my favorites. The prime rib, I like to use them together. So I like to mix and match pellets or rubs. Mm. Again, it just depends on what I'm cooking.
Yeah, so a coffee-based one, don't you?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How is that one?
It's good. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. I mean, it's very subtle, the coffee flavor. You can smell it a little bit, but it's a good one. Mm-hmm. So it just depends. Like I said, my kids like sweet, so our pork and poultry is crazy sweet. We came out with a new one called, Perfect Pork Rub. That's becoming a family favorite. Ace Hardware did an exclusive cherry rub that's pretty tasty. that everything rub, it comes in a blue, has a blue label, and it's salt, pepper, garlic with a little bit of lime. Mm-hmm. That's been a killer one too. So yeah, it just depends on what you're in. If you go to a lot of, like, you know, some of these barbecue shops and, you know, stores, they'll actually have samples you can try. Hmm. So again, next time you go to the shop, ask them if they have any open in the back or whatever. Yeah, you can take a, you know, take a taste, take a, you know, smell it and stuff. And yeah, it's a good way to kind of figure out what you want to do.
Salt, pepper, lime, and garlic. That sounds like it'd be great on chicken.
Real good. So that's the, my new. So I recently accidentally bought pork cushions.
Accidentally?
I did.
What is a pork cushion?
Exactly. So I thought I was buying two pork boneless pork butts. We were doing an event at a fly shop a couple weeks ago. We were doing tacos. And I unwrap them, and they're just like essentially like a ball of pork this big. So I looked it up, and what it is there's a certain muscle inside of a pork butt or a pork shoulder. And it's actually just that muscle only. So it's the biggest muscle that's kind of in the middle. So you have, like, I know you guys can't see at home, but, you know, you have the outer edge, which is your money muscle. Mm-hmm. And then you have two or three different pieces. So the biggest piece in the middle of a pork shoulder, they take all that other stuff out, and it's just that. It's called a pork cushion. The pack had four of them. So, again, they're probably a little bit bigger than a softball, you know, maybe the size of, like, a, you know, kid's soccer ball. And I put the Traeger rub, which is garlic and chili, and then I also combined it with the everything rub. And then I just smoked them normal. And then I did a little bit of Coke, a little bit of michelada, and some butter, and braised them in that. And they were insane. We made tacos out of them. And it was, that's my new favorite. I won't do a pork butt ever again.
Huh.
Yeah. Because it was also like a really good size too. You know, a lot of times we end up with so much meat left over.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a good size. So what I'll start doing is I'll start buying those and then vacuum sealing two or three of them.
I've never seen those out here.
No, I found it at a restaurant supply store. So just ask, like, go to a restaurant supply store, go to a butcher shop and ask them for it.
A pork cushion.
Pork cushion.
Huh. On your way home in Temecula, there's the Naughty Pig. You can stop in there and see if they got them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a U.S. Foods or whatever, like, restaurant supply store we had gone into to get a bunch of supplies for this event. And yeah, I wasn't paying attention, thought I was buying one thing. It was turned out to be a really good mistake.
What's the fat content in that? Is it?
It's surprisingly low. There was a pretty decent amount of fat on the outside of it. Because it was interesting. One guy was like, you got to mix it. Like, the fat's not there. And I'm like, this thing was flavorful. It just broke apart. Like, the other thing you got to realize too is that when you mix, so when you braise it with the beer and you braise it with the soda and then you braise it with the butter, butter's fat, right? So what I'll do is I'll take all the fat off of it, the big kind of clunky fat, and I'll put the pork into a different bowl. Then I'll shred it, and then I'll pour that juice back on. So you're adding fat into it because of what was in the braise. So with that, I mean, it was insane. It was super good. So, and then again, same thing. I'll cook a pork, like a chuck roast, or, you know, like a rump roast, the exact same way as I will a pork butt, and it will shred, make sandwiches, make tacos. So again, I'm not changing how I cook it. I'm just changing the cut, and I'm changing the seasonings and changing in how I serve it.
Nice.
At the end of the day, it's like, I mean, I could do it blindfolded.
Wow.
Yeah.
On the note of grilling crazy things, I mean, I've done almost everything from vegetables and Brussels sprouts to meat to pizza, anything. What's the craziest thing you've heard of someone actually grilling?
So I lived in Brazil.
Oh, really?
And that's how my love for barbecue really spiked. We'd always get together for Sunday dinners and stuff growing up. And
they do barbecue pretty well down there.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, that's kind of their thing. And so, again, you know, it was always a family thing. It was really fun. And then moved to Brazil, lived in the Amazon for a couple years. And I've eaten capybara, which is the world's biggest rodent, stingray, a lot of freshwater, crabs, monkey, turtle, alligator, snake.
I mean, alligator's good.
Yeah. You could buy alligator meat in a lot of places, kangaroo meat and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's capybara was insane. It wasn't on a Traeger. It was all open pit. But, like, that was down there eating a rodent that tasted that good. I was like, dude, I got to figure out this barbecue thing. And so, again, we were barbecuing constantly down there. And that's kind of where my love for grilling kind of took off. And then to parlay it into a job was insane.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you get any pictures of, like, crazy stuff in the Traegers or anything like that?
Just stuff I see on the internet. Most people that I, you know, most people want to, they kind of want to go with the sure bet. They don't get too, what do you call it?
Crazy.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah, adventurous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have Traeger grills exploded
internationally as they have, or as much as in the U.S.?
Yeah. They, Australia's going, is getting crazy.
Really?
Yep. They do a lot of good barbecue in Australia, a lot of their local stuff and a lot of influence from the U.S. The biggest barbecue trade show in the world is actually in, I think it's Germany. It's called Spoga, and it is a massive outdoor trade show. And, yeah, so through the UK and Denmark, we have a we actually have an international office in Copenhagen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then technically Canada is considered international, but yeah, they're starting to take off by their own right. And there's a ton of good barbecuers and people coming out of there. So you're starting to see it kind of happen everywhere. You know, I know a couple guys that have actually taken Traegers with them to Brazil.
Nice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of traveling and Traegers and all that, I think a couple weeks ago we talked about it before we kicked it on, but I think your boss's boat actually had the tailgater just mounted on the boat.
Yep.
I want to do that.
Yeah. It's pretty insane. So he had a new boat hide out of Idaho Falls. Lemoyne Hyde started Hyde Drift Boats. Their boats are indestructible. They're gorgeous. So I got to go to the facility and when they picked it up and take it on its maiden voyage. And yeah, I mean, that thing is, it is dialed in. Goal Zero generator, solar power generator in the front of the boat. Grill with a custom mount on the anchor bracket, and then there's a essentially an extension cord that runs from front to back. So the generator up front, and then the grill in the back kind of counter themselves out.
Right.
And yeah, I mean it is the craziest thing when you like get on the river and you're literally smoking food and like barbecuing, going down the river catching fish.
Oh my God, that's the life. That's the dream. Insane.
Yeah.
Leaving a smoke trail in a drift boat.
Yeah.
That thing's powered by something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been fun. That's a lot of fun. And then obviously the Ranger is a good portable unit. So a lot of guys with some bigger boats, you know, they'll pull those out. We've cooked on them on bait tanks. And there's been a couple guys that have made little mounts and stuff that either attach to rails or go right in a rod holder and stuff like that. But they all run after a basic 110. So again, they don't pull a lot of electricity. The hot rod is what pulls the most. And then after that, it's just the fan and the controller and the auger motor. So, I mean, they don't pull much at all.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm trying to talk. So I work for a couple different charter boats in San Diego. I've been like desperately trying to talk them into actually installing like a trailgater or something like
There's
that.
A couple boats that take them out.
Yeah.
They are full size grills, you know.
Really?
Just, yep. And they'll just like, you know, they'll essentially just tie them down. And
Does it actually work like being outdoors and with the wind and all that?
Totally.
Really?
I mean, I cook in blizzards.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. So. On that note.
But the other thing too, like if you have a grill, like cook the food at home and take it with you.
Yeah.
So like for example, a jet boil. So you can vacuum seal cooked pork. Put it jet boil, gets hot in like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and it's literally boiling 212 degrees. You can take the vacuum sealed pack and drop it inside the jet boil on the boat and it's like just like sous vide it to heat it back up. And you cut that open. Pull the pork out, you have hot pulled pork. So again, there's a lot of ways you can reheat meat, you know, and any and
that's
stuff.
The easy way to do it.
It really is. It really is. So like if you have a smaller boat or center console or whatever, plus the nice thing about that too is you don't have to worry about power.
Yeah.
You know, and but again, it's like a jet boil, just a little propane tank and it's super easy to do. So wow. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways you can kind of utilize it.
That's crazy. I think Traeger, correct me if I'm wrong, Rory, but I think Traeger just purchased or just bought that thermometer meter. I think that thing worked pretty well, and I can't wait to see what Traeger does with that.
Yeah, it's a cool. I mean, the whole thing around that is it calculates. Like that's the number one question I get. How long does it take to cook something? And Diva Q, who's one of our really longtime ambassadors, super great woman. Her joke's like it takes as long as it takes. It's done when it's done. So it's all about cooking it to the right temp. So again, like we talked about earlier, that might take 30 minutes or it might take an hour. You just don't know. So what's nice about that meter is it's actually going to triangulate based off of the internal temp of the meat, the protein, the ambient temperature of the grill, and then also the set temp, what you want to get it to. And it's going to have some sort of algorithm and triangulate, it's going to tell you when it's done. Huh. And it's pretty spot on. So it's nice, especially at Thanksgiving or Christmas. It's like, okay, cool. I'm doing my prime rib. You know, it's going to take me 3 hours to do a prime rib. More or less. So now it's like I can start watching it. And then it's like, okay, cool. Well, I know it's an hour left, so now I can start cooking my sides. So you can plan your whole meal so it's all done at the same time rather than like try to guess and then eat one or two parts that are cold.
So, okay, so that was my next question. When it comes to, is it good just to err on the side of caution when it comes to the timing, where it's better, if you know prime rib is going to take 3 hours, it's better to start at 4 hours before you're going to eat or something? Is it good to be conservative like that? Or you,
if you're like, let's say you're going to have like host people.
Yeah.
Do a test cook. The other thing too is like, so there's a lot of similarities between barbecue and fishing. So think about like, you have some of these guys that fish and they keep these tedious notes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tides, moon phases, times of day, you know, the angle of the sun versus the angle of the moon. Like these guys get pretty intense, right?
Yeah.
Do the same thing with barbecue. So like visually take pictures. Like I take pictures of the meat before. And so it's like, I know when I go to the store now, like what I'm looking for when I buy it. And I've cooked so many, I kind of know how long it should take. So again, keep notes on that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to get crazy and be like, oh, the barometric pressure, you know, when I did that brisket was phenomenal at 47% and the humidity was 92. Like, but just like, you know, take mental notes, take pictures and stuff and, you know, take little notes if, you know, and then again, do a test cook.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially if you're going to try out a new recipe, don't try a new recipe out when you're going to have company over.
Yeah.
You know, but again, it's like, okay, cool. We're, you know, Thanksgiving, for example. Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to do a small turkey a month before.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, that was a 10-pound turkey. That took me X amount of time. Okay, I really like this rub. I didn't like that rub. I want to change this part of the rub. I put too much butter and not enough butter, whatever it is. And then that way you can kind of know what you're getting yourself into the day of.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's the one thing, the biggest recommendation I have is if you have the ability to do a couple test cook, go for it. And if you are hosting and you're concerned, you shouldn't be serving that meat. Pick something you're confident in serving.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Does climate really make a difference?
I haven't noticed.
No.
I've cooked in Hawaii. I've cooked in the desert. I've cooked in Arizona, Utah. I've cooked all over the Western United States. And it's not enough to make a difference personally.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Darren, I see you picking out your new grill there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually looking at the one. You just got the Ironwood 885.
Yep.
It's a nice looking deal right there.
For sure. I started off on the tailgater, and Rory, I got to tell you, that thing was bitching.
I love
it. It's cool.
It made some good ribs.
Yeah. Yeah. Multiple times. Yeah. Many times.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's very portable. I like the foldable legs on that one too and all that. You can transport it. I've taken that thing out to, you know, almost the sport boats. I've taken out to Palm Springs and all that. It's really portable.
It is.
I like
it. It's a great little grill.
I like it.
Yeah.
And how much square foot or how many square inches is that? Do you remember?
No, but you can easily do 2 racks of ribs, maybe 3, depending on how you trim them.
I've done 3.
Yeah, you can do 2 or 3 tri-tips. You can easily do a pork butt. I've gotten 2 full-size chickens in there. So
mm-hmm.
That's the other thing, too, about the grill, the Traeger, is like because of the convection and the wood pellet and the indirect heat, you can really shove that thing full of stuff. So as long as you can get some air circulating, like
yeah,
you can have a 1/2 inch gap between your meat and the top of it, and it's pretty solid.
So, it is.
Yeah, you don't have to be too shy.
Yeah, I mean, I've done 3 racks of ribs. I've done plenty of burgers and all that stuff. I mean, it's just a solid grill, and it's not small by any means, but it's not large.
No, it's good. It's a good size grill. So yeah, I have that.
So we've done plenty of different events down at Dana Landing and all that stuff, and you typically come out with your salty dogs.
Okay, yeah. So that salty dog, Casey Curtis, he's a ex-pro surfer, you know, the godfather of Salt Creek, and mm-hmm. just an awesome dude. He's become a really good friend of mine, so he's one of the Southern California reps for Salty Crew. He also reps Matson Sunglasses, which another good friend of mine owns out of Oceanside. Mm-hmm. So we've become really good friends over the last 8+ years. And he was taking Traegers to his events, and he would do hot dogs for the kids, and he would do pulled pork sandwiches for the adults.
Mm.
He got kind of through the day, and he miscalculated, and he had all this pulled pork, but he had no buns. So he started taking the pulled pork and putting it on top of the hot dogs with with the coleslaw.
Nice.
And then we started adding jalapenos and started adding that. So, yeah, Casey Curtis invented the salty dog, and it has become, like, a mainstay in Southern California. Like, every event, like, I could offer like, hey, can I do prime rib for everyone? And they're like, nah, let's do salty dogs. Like,
yeah.
And then we started doing a couple salty dogs at events up in Utah. And mm-hmm. so it's been fun to kind of introduce the fly fishing scene to the salty dog. So
that's like the California burrito.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's insane. It's so good.
I did salty dogs, I don't know, maybe like a month ago for the family. I was bored on a Sunday and I'm like, hey, I'll just kick on the Traeger and do that. And it was fantastic. I think I put those on Hawaiian rolls instead. Oh my gosh.
People losing their minds are like, yeah, they like the first you can't wrap your hand around it. And some people are a little leery and then they always come back for more. So the last event I saw you at, I think was,
it's like March or something for the seminar.
It was May.
Or May, yeah. Yeah,
down at Dana Landing.
Yeah.
I think we served over 300 salty dogs that day.
I had at least two of them.
Yeah. So that was a good time.
Yeah, for sure. Guys, that is going to wrap it up for the CCA California podcast, but we're going to continue the conversation on the Doc Talk podcast. Make sure to go follow that and follow us there right now. We will see you guys next week.